The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Continuing in this episode, we'll dig deeper into the March issue of Our State magazine, featuring articles about the foothills of North Carolina. And our first article is called Lucy's Legacy. Sunset Fiber Works and Penland School of Craft help shape the Yadkin Valley's next generation of weavers. Side to side, Mary Frieza's hands glide. Her loom is light to the touch, like weaving through air. On the first floor of the Sunset Fiberworks studio, loom parts and pieces surround her, claiming every tabletop and shelf in the open living room and kitchen. Through the windows, the Yadkin Valley stretches into view, a mosaic of earth and poplars that is particular to this part of Wilkes County. Mary's newer looms are wider than the one in front of her today. She sits at a machine built in the 1930s for Lucy Morgan, founder of Penland School of Craft and great aunt to Mary's husband, John. Nearly a century later, its only real wear is from the Frieza's late dog, Belle. Despite chew marks on one of the cross pieces, the loom weaves as reliably as it did when Lucy hauled it up and down and around the foothills. Having grown up in Rutherfordton, Mary has called these hills home for most of her life. She and her siblings spent their childhoods using the land to mold mud pots and craft bows and arrows. In 1963, she left for UNC Chapel Hill, where she met and married John. It wasn't until her late 30s, while living in Cary, that she felt called to weaving, a craft that connected her to Western North Carolina. Mary shared her interest in the craft with John's Aunt Helen, whose straightforward nature Mary had come to admire throughout the women's close relationship. Eventually, Aunt Helen put her hands on her hips and said, "Mary, I have a loom I will give you, but only if you will learn to weave first." So Aunt Helen then sent Mary to Joanne Nolan, a friend and weaving instructor at Haywood Community College. Mary stayed in Joanne's guest room and spent her days weaving in the basement. Joanne guided her step by step at first, then left her to work alone. If Mary got stuck, she'd just call up to her teacher. "It took me a week. At the end, I had a 48-inch throw that I still use," Mary says. "I realized later that she really taught me everything I needed to know. Once you've got the fundamentals down, you can teach yourself the rest." When it was time for Mary to head back to Cary, Aunt Helen held up her end of the deal and gave her Lucy's loom. Over the years, Mary made dish towels, shawls, ponchos, and scarves. When she and John returned to the foothills in the early 2000s to settle on John's family farm, it was for good. John built a studio with a downstairs workspace and an upstairs bedroom for students and visitors. In that studio, Mary weaves at Lucy's loom, looking out over grazing cattle and gravel roads that wind through the foothills. Lucy's loom has been Mary's primary tool for most of her weaving career. Lucy was a small woman, and her loom reflects her stature. It can only weave a 24-inch wide piece, which shrinks down to a 21-inch wide scarf or placemat. Made of light poplar wood, the loom was easy for Lucy to cart around in the trunk of her car. Even the treadles, the pedals that control the direction of the threads, sit closely together, well suited for someone with smaller feet. The loom accompanied Lucy throughout Appalachia beginning in the 1930s. Born in 1889, Lucy knew Western North Carolina as home, only leaving briefly for college and work. In 1920, she arrived in Penland to teach at the Appalachian School, founded by her brother Rufus. In January of 1923, Lucy accompanied a student to Berea College in Kentucky to help her settle in and found that the region was home to a vibrant craft community. And like Mary later would, Lucy felt a calling. Immersed in the art of weaving, she found inspiration. Lucy knew that back in Penland, the community was one built around labor. Folks in the mountain relied on the land and each other. Often, a woman's only means of income was selling extra butter and eggs. Aunt Lucy was nothing if not independent, Mary says. Returning to Penland in the spring, Lucy brought weaving with her. With her strong will and newfound skill set, Lucy soon proved the craft valuable to the community. She convinced the Appalachian School to support her growing coalition of weavers and began a weaving program. This eventually led to the founding of the Penland School of Craft in 1929. About a decade later, Lucy acquired her portable loom, which she carried into communities across Appalachia to spread her craft. The spirit that drove Lucy now motivates Mary. I grew up in the mountains. The mountains are isolating. If you can't do it yourself, you do without, Mary says. There's a creativeness that probably comes from the fact that you have to do it. No one is going to show up at the front door with XYZ. Mary describes her looms as musical. A fitting description, given that weaving drafts, which guide each part of the process, look a bit like musical staves. Just as a score lays out each note to create a melody, the draft maps out the steps for setting up a loom and weaving a specific pattern. Each aspect is planned, so when the side-to-side threads, or the weft, are woven through the threads that go from the front to the back of the loom, called the warp, a pattern emerges. Thread by thread, Mary uses a small tool called a shuttle to guide the weft through an open space in the warp called the shed, then beats the new row into place. When you're good and in your groove, there's a rhythm to it, Mary says. The loom is noisy. Clunk, shimmy, thump. Clunk, shimmy, shump. She says she's tried to make every mistake possible, so she knows how to fix them. She encourages her students to take chances as well, instilling the notion that you can't weave your way out of trouble. Students can come to Sunset Fiberworks for a day or a week to learn the craft or to experience that I-did-it-myself moment. Mary understands the pride that's woven into this practice, a pride as intrinsic to Appalachian life today as it was when Lucy Morgan first arrived. Through the studio windows, the sky opens and illuminates the peaks and hollers of the Yadkin Valley. With the land resembling a woven tapestry of its own, it's no wonder the foothills call on those like Lucy and Mary to create. To find out more about Sunset Fiberworks, check out sunsetfiberworks.com. Our next article is entitled Memories of Troutman. One of modern country music's most celebrated songwriters recalls his earliest musical experiences growing up in Iredell County. Of all the places in North Carolina that hold meaning in my life, places where music is made and joy is had, places that have charted the course of my life as a singer and composer of songs that are deeply rooted in our state, the small foothills town of Troutman in Iredell County is perhaps the most special. My older sister Becky and I were born at Davis Hospital, the closest medical facility, about 7 miles away in Statesville. Our father, W.C. Chap Lauderdale, was the pastor at the New Perth Associate Reformed Presbyterian Church, and our mom was the choir director. We lived on Perth Church Road. Our faith community was the tie that bound us all together. We spent much of our lives in church, Sunday morning and Wednesday nights, weddings, funerals, and vacation Bible school in the summer. On Sabbath day after the service, we were usually invited to have lunch at a rotating list of church families' homes. I can still smell the food. It was so delicious. Everyone in Troutman was good to us. My dad and mom were loved by the community, and we all loved them back. In addition to her choir duties, Mom also taught chorus at Troutman High School and gave private piano lessons. Sometimes I'd meet her at her glee club rehearsals and listen to her students' voices singing some of my favorite songs, like Catch a Falling Star and You'll Never Walk Alone. Sitting there, soaking in the music, it was an indescribable feeling. Two of her students, Henry Bridgers and Ed Barefoot, were from nearby Barium Springs. Mom instilled a deep passion for music in them, and in later years they would bring along records they were listening to by artists like Peter, Paul, and Mary and the Kingston Trio and share those new sounds with me. They brought guitars, too, which piqued my curiosity. I looked up to Henry and Ed, and eventually I learned to play the guitar myself. I remember going to talent shows at the high school where I'd see a lot of singing and picking and skits. Nowadays, I try to pass the passion that I discovered in those early years along to new generations of children, not just in upbeat good time songs like Kakalaki, which I co-wrote with Charlotte activist and folk singer C. Khan, but also in the all-ages Chris Austin Songwriting Contest, which I chaired for 20 years at Merlefest in Wilkesboro. When my folks needed someone to look after Becky and me while they were working, they left us in the care of Lenny Nesbitt and her husband, Bob. The Nesbitts were our surrogate grandparents, and their daughter, Ruth, and her husband, Kenny, were like an aunt and uncle. Bob was a carpenter and had a huge garden in the back of his house and a woodshed next to the garage. Later, as a teen, I wrote my first song, I'm Chopping Wood, standing right next to Bob's woodshed. Lenny and Bob's house was on South Main Street and faced the Troutman Shirt Company, which locals called the shirt mill. For townspeople, the mill provided steady employment. In addition to shirts, it produced jeans, work pants, and leisure clothing, some of the styles that I'd eventually work into my stage wear. A block away from the mill was a strip of local businesses, a drugstore with a soda fountain, and a magazine stand featuring copies of my favorite comics, Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, Archie, and the fantastic monsters of the films. Bud Brown's grocery store was just up the street, and in the other direction there was Poole's Five and Dime. When the weather cooled down in the fall, we'd all go see the Troutman Bobcats play football or to the Iredell County Fair. Halloween was one of my favorite times. I loved the beauty of the turning leaves. When winter came, there would be a Christmas Eve service at the church and a Christmas breakfast the next morning in the church basement. During the cold months, I'd often visit the Nesbitts. Bob would stoke the fire stove in his den, and he and I would sit and talk on rockers made at the Troutman Chair Company. I was just 5 years old when our family moved to the big city of Charlotte, where Dad got a job as the director of church extension. It really tore me up to leave, but we were only an hour away, so I visited frequently and would always stay with Lenny and Bob. As the years go by and friends pass on, I appreciate more and more how fortunate I was to have spent my childhood in this small foothills town, where memories of church music, and the many, many wonderful people I knew still live in my mind and my heart. This article is written by Jim Lauderdale, who is a multiple Grammy Award-winning singer and songwriter whose music has been recorded by artists ranging from country stars George Strait, Blake Shelton, Vince Gill, and Patti Loveless to rocker Elvis Costello. He's released 37 albums since 1991, including When Carolina Comes Home Again, a loving tribute to his native state. The next article is entitled Marvelous Main Streets. More than here to there thoroughfares, these downtown blocks bring commerce, gatherings, and civic pride to foothills towns. First up here is Elkin. The Yadkin River keeps drivers company as they head east along North Carolina Highway 268 toward Elkin. The waterway flows parallel to the town's main street, meandering at a peaceful pace, much like the folks who traverse the sidewalks. A signpost's arrows point the way to shops in downtown and signify that Main Street is part of the Mountains to the Sea Trail, which converges with the Yadkin River State Trail for paddlers, as well as the Overmountain Victory National Historic Trail. It's only fitting that Elkin hosts the North Carolina Trail Days Festival each year. Across the street from the signpost, Angry Troll Brewing refreshes local and day trippers returning from the Stone Mountain State Park, about 30 minutes northwest, with a pint of beer and a slice of wood-fired pizza. Several doors up, River and Trails Emporium stocks a variety of outdoors gear, from tents, hiking boots, and hammocks to Elkin-branded clothing and hats. Gina Haynes Buchanan and her son Ryan Grider run the shop, which was a Rose's Five and Dime when Gina was growing up, At the back of the store, they operate Creamy Days, serving lattes as well as ice cream on Doffles, D-O-F-F-L-E-S, a square baked treat made from waffle and donut batter. In 2019, they started the ice cream and coffee shop on North Bridge Street. 4 years later, they moved to the current location and expanded to include the outdoors stock. Haynes Buchanan says she's been pleased with how much downtown has grown over the past 7 years. It almost feels like a Hallmark movie, she says, bringing the community together in a positive way. Soon, the mother and son duo plan to show movies and sporting events in the back of the store so visitors can relax at the booths Gina's husband built and enjoy a cone full of tasty flavors like the popular Elk and Pothole, a mix of chocolate fudge and peanut butter cups. Two doors down from River and Trails, guests grab seats in the high-backed booths at Ember's Eclectic Pub to enjoy craft cocktails, beer, and wine. The neighboring restaurant, Southern on Main, satisfies cravings with lunch and dinner comfort foods like sweet tea brined fried chicken, shrimp and grits, and country fried steak. Across the street, the Wisdom Table serves meal from a small select menu and curated wine list. On the western end of Main Street, visitors find other diversions. The bookend is the 1940s Reeves Theater, a historic Art Deco venue that hosts open mic nights, songwriter showcases, jam sessions, and concerts by local musicians. Shoppers can browse Wildflower Boutique and gifts for souvenirs like boho and vintage women's clothing, graphic t-shirts, prepared foods, locally made pottery, and a charm bracelet making station. Meanwhile, the Yadkin Valley Fiber Center draws people from across the country to learn about weaving, a heritage craft native to the Appalachian Mountains. Leslie Vesperman, its founder and director, says she's pleased with the exposure that the center receives on Main Street. "The excitement I see when people learn how to weave, that's very rewarding," Vesperman notes. "It's nice to be part of a small, nice downtown." Next up is Walnut Cove. In the shadow of Hanging Rock State Park, trees look like green cotton balls, covering the landscape's slight hills and valleys. After driving along NC Highway 311 for several miles, the road unravels into Walnut Cove's Main Street. There, a blue awning drapes over a black and white sign, the Milk Bar, it reads, flagging down famished drivers. Owner Debbie Sorrell strolls in, waving to customers and waiting at the ice cream bar at the front of the shop. She looks around at the lunch crowd and confesses, "When we first opened, we had no restaurant experience." After church one Sunday in 2015, Sorrell and her daughter, Christy Shirley, peered into the window of what is now the Milk Bar, Baking was a hobby of Sorrell's, and the For Rent sign was conjuring visions of making and selling cakes. After looking inside, the two found that the space had a hot bar counter and industrial-grade kitchen equipment, and, well, it seemed like they might as well use it. Debbie and her husband Jerry signed the lease, and they all got to work. The trio culled from family recipes to make the most of the items on their hot bar, and the menu now includes a few customer suggestions as well. The Milk Bar carries on a heritage of the milk bars that popped up in the 1940s, gathering places to eat and enjoy non-alcoholic drinks and fellowship. Or, as Sorrell says when she sees two tables striking up a conversation, "Gosh, it's like being at your grandma's house." While the Milk Bar is certainly a locals' place, it also feeds plenty of out-of-towners who come through on their way to or from hiking or camping at Hanging Rock. Along the road from Sorrell's place, 1889 Tap House sells beer on tap and wine by the glass for those looking to wind down after a hike or meal, or both. Across the street and down a ways, the Just Plain Country Store is a refuge for shoppers. 16,000 square feet of antiques, home decor, and any gift item you can think of. Owner Kathy Dix has filled the 1916 building with 150 vendors who sell items ranging from tea towels to ceramic Christmas trees to vintage gas station memorabilia. When Dick started the building in 2001, she ran it from a tiny space across the street. "We graduated a little bit," she says. "On the second Saturday of November, during the annual Just Plain Country Festival, Dix expands her beauty, her style of hospitality out onto the road by closing 4th Street and hiring music and food vendors. It's the kind of open arms principle that doesn't just happen in the fall. It's the kind that keeps Main Street the heart of Walnut Cove." Marion. With just a slight turn of the steering wheel, a trip down U.S. 221 business transitions into Marion South Main Street. The outline of the Blue Ridge Mountains on the city's welcome sign matches the slope of green in the rearview mirror. On the right, the Blanton House Restaurant and Venue, a Greek Revival home turned into a fine dining restaurant, is an eye-catching landmark that greets visitors. Excuse me, some coming from Lake James State Park, about 25 minutes away. On the left, the painted windows of Ingenious Coffee Roasters, which sometimes features images like Bigfoot and a snowman drinking cups of Joe, provide an entertaining greeting. The core of Marion's Main Street is the McDowell Arts Council Association building. Here, resident tabby cat, Biscuit, can sometimes be seen sleeping in the cat tree by the window. Next to Biscuit's alcove, shelves display works by about 100 local artists. Colorful pottery, paintings, jewelry, fiber, and other creations fill the space with an artistry that's rooted in the North Carolina foothills. Ann Branham, the assistant director and Biscuit's owner, started working for the nonprofit around 2017. "It's crazy the things you start doing for free that you end up getting paid for," she says. Branham and executive director Susan Pyatt Baker have a hand in supporting many of McDowell County's arts initiatives. The artist's storefront is just the tip of the iceberg. They also help bring music and arts education into public schools, run a children's theater program, and host events like art workshops and summer camps. Branham and Pyatt Baker say that they're grateful to advocate for the arts in a place where community members work toward making downtown Marion a thriving place. Across the street, one of those individuals is Doug Watson, co-owner of Flavors on Main. A Marion native, Watson opened the business as a small gourmet food store in 2018. After working in corporate finance for 25 years, he moved back home, reconnected with Debbie Call, the curly blonde-haired girl he had a crush on at McDowell High School, and married her. Leaning on memories of seeing Belkin Rose's discount store on Main Street as a kid, Watson thought Marion needed an anchor general store. He told Debbie in 2020, "Let's take a leap of faith and do it ourselves." They transitioned the shop into a general store in a 6,500-square-foot space outfitted with some of the original hardwood floors and light fixtures. Flavors on Main is true to its name, selling infused olive oils and balsamic vinegars, teas and spice mixes, and the Watsons also pride themselves on offering big brand names that locals would usually have to drive far for, including Big Green Egg, Orvis, and Osprey. At the end of the block, the familiar dome that formerly housed Fifth Third Bank rises into the sky. At its base, folks meander through the day, grabbing a bite from Elevate Business Company, sipping a pint from Refinery 13, slipping into Marion Wines to choose a bottle, and ultimately explore all that downtown Marion has to offer. Forest City. Before the hills of the Piedmont grow into the slopes of the Blue Ridge Mountains, about 40 minutes southeast of Lake Lure, Forest City is Rutherford County's big draw. Downtown, Main Street splits around a median filled with trees, flowers, benches, and a fountain. On one side of the street, nostalgia awaits at Smith's Drugs of Forest City, a classic soda fountain spot that serves up milkshakes, sandwiches, and burgers cooked on the flat top. Carolina Arcade Museum continues the retro trend a few doors down with pinball machines and beloved arcade games like Pac-Man. A few steps away, Harrell & Harrell Design Company is a modern haven for home decor and modern and custom furniture. The front of the shop showcases a sturdy farmhouse table that owner Jason Harrell made. In fact, he handcrafted most of the large pieces of furniture for sale inside the store, and many are tastefully outfitted with napkins, china, candles, and glassware made by his wife, Dana. "All I ever did was build houses with my dad," Jason says. "Dana's the one that pushed me into furniture building, but it was a good push." Custom projects are still a big part of Harrell & Harrell. The couple, who opened the store in 2019, uses their inventory to display examples of what Jason can build, while Dana helps show customers ways to style the pieces to fit their home's aesthetic. Across Main Street, outfitter Vintage Valley Apparel sells everyday Western-style jeans, boots, and accessories, while Paws and Purrs, Barkery, and Boutique helps pet owners outfit their furry friends in designer-made clothes. After all that browsing, the Hoot Nanny, located in a faded brick building, beckons from the corner of Main Street. Bringing in families looking to satisfy their barbecue or burger cravings, the Hoot Nanny also serves steaks and bourbon flights. It has 68 different kinds of the bourbon whiskey. But ask Johnny Ray Busolo, who owns the restaurant with business partner Steve Soto, and he's quick to tell you what's on most tables: baskets of hand-breaded cheese curds served with house-made ranch and marinara. Busolo figures the restaurant sells about 150 pounds of the appetizer a week. That's a quarter of a million cheese curds in a year. All set and surely satisfied, folks merge on back onto Main Street, coasting the roads of Rutherford County toward home. Another new column for our state is the Supper Club column. Gather around the table for meals and memories. This is entitled Board Meetings. Before a chef served elegant charcuterie, she was a young girl discovering refined flavors at the local Hickory Farm shop. Armed with the $10 from my dad and a newfound sense of independence, I spent many preteen days roaming Friendly Shopping Center in Greensboro. My mom dropped my friends and me off to explore our favorite stores, Woolworth, Will's Book and Stationery, Potpourri, but we always ended up at Hickory Farms, where my money didn't go very far, but the free samples certainly did. Inside, there were wooden barrels of hard candy, wheels of cheddar cheese, and prepackaged gift boxes everywhere. We followed the smoky, spiced scent of the good stuff. We'd snatch up Swiss cheese balls, tiny bites of summer sausage, and a variety of smoked cheeses. A jar of their signature sweet hot mustard and a plate of crackers sat next to the sausage display, a true bounty of bites. I'd prepare two slices of summer sausage with a sample of smoked cheddar while dredging a cracker through the mustard for the one glorious combination. Now a grown-up with my own money, I've noticed that my fascination with meat and cheese pairings has taken on a new form. When entertaining friends, I'd often cover a platter with a selection of cured meats, cheeses, fruits, pickled veggies, nuts, olives, spreads, and good crackers. My guests and I will crowd around the kitchen island, sharing plates and stories throughout the evening. As I nibble on sweet salami and smoked gouda with fruit spread or spicy mustard, an elevated version of those days sneaking up samples at Hickory Farms, where I first learned the joy of snacking with friends. That sound means that we're out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. This podcast is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Content of this program is intended for people who are blind, print, and impaired, and is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time.